Genesis 29. The story has now moved on from Abraham, we've moved to Isaac, and now we're finally in the life of Jacob. And so Jacob, we saw that at Rebekah, his mother's leading, he deceived his father. He pretended to be someone that he was not, his brother. Now, not only did he get the birthright, he also got the blessing. And then his brother Esau was furious, and he said he was going to kill him. And so he fled also at the leading of his mother. He fled to Uncle Laban in the family, really, in Paddan Aram. And on the road, we read that God met him in an amazing way in this dream, where he saw the angels on the ladder of God, and this amazing time where God met him and God said to him, God really confirmed and reaffirmed the covenant that he made to his grandfather Abraham. And so this is a picture, as we said last week, of God's amazing grace, just in the life of Jacob, that didn't deserve any of these things, but God wanted to do it. And that's the thing for us tonight, even as we look through the story of Jacob, that God chooses to bless us, not because of who we are, but because of who he is. He can even overlook that selfishness and that sin as he's busy working out something in our life. And tonight, I just entitled it, The Provision of God. And the first thing there, Jacob starts building a family. So let's look at verse 1. So Jacob went on his journey and came to the land of the people of the east. And so now, he's finally in Haran, and God has blessed his journey. God has been with him all this way. He has guided him, protected him, brought him to the place that he had to go. And he looked and saw well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of it, the well, they watered the flocks, and a large stone was on the well's mouth. So what would happen is they had this large well, but now to keep it closed, because water is obviously a very precious resource in that area, and you want to protect that. So you don't want to have something fall in there like a sheep or something and contaminate the well. And so they have this huge rock on there. And the way that the custom was for them is all these different flocks would be brought together by these different shepherds from different families, and they would come together. And then at one moment they would lift off the rock, and then everyone would be watered. And so that's really the idea. As he got there, this is what he saw. So all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth. So obviously this was the custom, but this was also a way to protect this very precious resource. And Jacob said to them, "My brethren, where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." Because you can imagine in those days, it's not like there's little road signs saying Haran, 2 kilometers, you know. So he was walking and he's like, you know, where am I? So he had to ask them. Then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." It's one of those guys like, yeah, we definitely know him. You know, everyone knows Laban, and maybe you don't want to know him. So I don't know if it was a good question to ask. But he says, "Well, is he well?" And they said, "He's well. And look, his daughter Rachel is coming with the sheep." So I think everyone knew Laban very well, because as we've seen before, he's a scoundrel. And we're going to find out tonight even what a big deceiver he is. But now, Jacob is blessed because God promised Abraham he would bless him. And this is the thing we're going to see all through these chapters tonight. Not because of anything that Jacob did, but because God is faithful. Because God has said, "I will bless your descendants." He said it to Abraham. And so God guides him, God protects him, God provides for him, and God blesses him, all because he said he would. Because God is good, not because of anything that he really does or deserves. Then he said, "Look, it's still high day. It's not time for the cattle to be gathered together. Water the sheep and go and feed them." So he was one of those guys, you know, he knew a lot about sheep and that kind of thing. We're going to see it a bit later on. So he's like, "You guys are being ineffective." He's a smart guy and he knew the sheep, but you can say a lot of things about Jacob, but he wasn't a lazy man. So he was like sort of, he's standing there looking at all these guys. It's only midday. The watering is only going to be at the end of the day. He's like, "What are you doing lazing around? You're already waiting for the thing to be open sometime." It's like, "You should be out, you know, watering the flock." And so he's giving the local guys sort of a lesson almost in tending their sheep. You know, not the way to go about it, because he just met them. He's just like, "Hey, where are you from?" And then he tells the guys what to do about their sheep, you know. But I think Jacob is one of these guys, he just can't help himself. You get people like that, you know. You meet them and they're just so overwhelmed by something, they will just say stuff to you, you know. And this is sort of what he does. And he's just like, "You lazy bums, you know, you should be sitting around here. You should be going out and feeding and getting the sheep out and then come back later, you know." There's also the possibility that he's trying to get them away so he can talk to Rachel, because, I mean, that's really, obviously she's coming, and that's why he is there, one of the reasons that he is there. Then in verse 8, but they said, we cannot until all the flocks are gathered together and they have rolled a stone from the well's mouth, then we water the sheep. So basically, this is not how it works here. This is our custom. And also, it was a big stone. Verse 9. Now, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled a stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. She comes here, and he is, I don't know if he's showing off his strength to impress her, you know, but he's like, there is my cousin. You know, this is the reason that he's here, really. Because he went, yes, he's running away from Esau, but the reason that they gave his father why he's going is so he can marry one of the daughters of Laban. And so here's one of the daughters of Laban coming. And so now he's like, I don't know if he's trying to impress her, but he by himself rolls a stone away so the flock can be watered. And then we see in verse 11, then Jacob kissed Rachel and lifted up his voice and wept. So that's not a typical response. It's like, you know, first time she sees him, and it wasn't, you know, the kind of kiss that you can imagine. It was just like a, you know, they had all these customary kisses. I don't know how you kiss your cousin or whatever, but it's sort of like there was a kiss, and then he started crying. You know, this guy is like so happy to be there. And so I think she was also taken by that and quite affected by the way it affected him. And Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and he was Rebekah's son. So she ran and told her father. So he told her, we're cousins. You know, I came all this way. And so she ran and told her father. You know, so obviously she was quite excited about that. Verse 13. And then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. So he told Laban all the things, all these things. And so now, you know, he's got a happy uncle too. And we know this uncle is motivated by wealth and by money and that kind of thing. And he knows that Rebecca married into the riches and the wealth of Abraham. And so he thinks, man, there's a son, you know, and he's excited, first of all, to see him. But he's always got another thing up his sleeve. But at this moment, he's a happy uncle. And he tells him everything that's been happening and just how things obviously are going. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him for a month. And you can, if you think back to the previous chapter, it's like he thought he was going for a few days until Esau really cools off. So now it's been a month, you know, which is probably considered a few days. But now things are getting a little bit more uncomfortable because obviously he's living with them. And I don't know if Laban is not seeing much of this wealth because he probably just showed up there with his walking stick. He probably didn't have much on him as far as any money and things. And so now he's living with them for this month. And I think things are, you know, almost getting a bit uncomfortable here. And Jacob seemed to be very knowledgeable. He seemed to be hardworking. We're going to see now. So it's almost like he just jumps in and he starts shepherding. He starts taking care of the flock. And it's just something that he's obviously good at. And he starts doing that. But it seems like Laban is getting a bit impatient here. Then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? I know your family. But Laban probably realizes this guy is a handy guy to have around. You can see he's a hard worker. And he's like, if I don't put him under the contract now, you know, I'm probably going to lose him. Because either he's going to go or he's going to work for someone else or whatever. So I better make a plan here, you know. And so he says it in such a nice way, you know, like, what should your wages be? I mean, how would that be for a job interview? Your boss says, tell me what you want, you know. What should I pay you? It sort of sounds like the ideal situation. How much do you want? But it sounded great. But he was really saying, if you want to stay any longer, you got to sign a contract like a hired servant. You got to be under contract to me. Because otherwise you're eating my food for free kind of thing, you know. So it's really not such a nice thing that he was saying to him. Verse 16 says, now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. So obviously, we told now the story a bit further on. So he's got two daughters, and Jacob at this stage knew exactly what he wanted. So he didn't really have to ask him a second time. because the first time that he saw Rachel, we're going to see now, you know, his whole mind was made up. And it said there in verse 17 that Leah's eyes were delicate, but Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. So we see these two sisters, and it says Leah's eyes were delicate. So she had eyes that were, the meaning of that word delicate is really either weak or tender or soft. You know, many people say she was the ugly sister. That's the sort of concept that many people have. I mean, her name does mean wild cow in Akkadian. But besides that, I don't think that's really the part of the story. You know, it's like, I don't think she was really the ugly sister. The fact that she had delicate eyes, you know, it could mean so many things. It probably meant that the eyes were different. Her name, Leah, means weary. So shame, you know. These kids got names when their mothers gave birth to them. So her mother was probably weary at this stage. And she's like, I'm going to call my kid weary for the rest of her life. And so she had delicate eyes. And so possibly her eyes were just dull in comparison to Rachel's eyes. They were all sparkly and shiny. Or maybe her eyes were even blue. It's just a different kind of eyes than all the people had them. Most people had brown eyes. So maybe her eyes were blue. So it's just like, she was different. She was the one with the eyes, and the other one was the one with the face and the form, you know. So that's really the way that it's described here, because Rachel was beautiful of form and appearance. So Rachel, ew. Her name means ew. So she is like the one, she's a babe in comparison to her sister, according to Jacob, right? And so then Jacob loved Rachel. So he said, I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. So that's love at first sight in the Bible right here. He sees Rachel, he's like, I want her. Like, I'll work 7 years for this girl. You know, when he saw her, he was totally smitten. He said, 7 years. But I mean, that's really to work for the dowry, because he didn't bring anything with him. It's not like he had all the riches with him or anything. So in that culture, just like many cultures today, it's almost like the labola. You know, you pay a dowry. And the whole idea with that was almost like a support in advance. Because if you treat your wife bad, or if something goes wrong in the marriage and you leave her or whatever, then she has something to fall back onto. So the whole idea was the parents, the dad would keep the dowry for a time such as that. That was the idea, not that Laban would do that. He would keep it for himself. Okay, so though Jacob came from a family with great wealth, you know, he left home with nothing. And he had nothing to give for the dowry, but he fell in love and he said, 7 years. I'll work 7 years if I could marry her. And, you know, I want you to understand that 7 years was over and beyond. It's like the kind of thing she was probably seriously thrilled, because if he said, like, I'll work a year for her, it would have been great. You know, Laban would have gone for it. And now, so he said 7 years. And so look at Laban. He says, Laban, he says, it's better that I give her to you than I should give her to another man. Stay with me. So he plays it cool. You know, he's just like, he's not going to get too excited because he's a scoundrel. He's like, okay, I'd rather give her to you than to someone else. But inside he's thinking, yes, 7 years. I've got a slave for 7 years, you know. And that's just such a deal, you know. So just sign right here on the dotted line kind of thing. And so Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed only a few days to him because of the love that he had for her. So that's what love does. You know, you go all goo-goo and you do crazy things for the one that you love. And just think about all the crazy things that you did, you know. You know, don't look at me like that. Didn't you do any crazy things? You know, maybe you were one of the boring people who just like, okay, can I get 10 months for her kind of thing? You know, no. He was like, I'll give you 7 years. And to him, it was just like, it just went like that, because you know, he loved her. And I think this is a great test right here for true love. Are you able to wait? The world pressures. The world always pressures. Like, if you love me, you know, I don't want to wait, or that kind of thing. But true love will wait. We see in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that we're only going to do in a few weeks on. We'll get to that chapter in Sunday mornings. We see that agape love is patient. Love is patient. Where on the other side, eros love, where you can say lust, is not. Lust is not patience. Like, I want it now. I want fulfillment now. Where, on the other hand, love is willing to wait. And this is a great test for that. I mean, he truly loved her, that he would wait for her for 7 years. That's quite amazing. I mean, I always admire that of my grandma waited for my grandpa while he was in the war. How long did he wait? Did she wait for him? Yeah, the whole wartime she waited for him. I mean, and he came back and they got married. I love that. It's just great. You know, that's like That's true love. Verse 21, it says, Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. So now, obviously, after the 7 years, Jacob's like been counting down. It's like to the day, you know, he's been like, this is 7 years. So he's ticked it off, and it's like Laban's not even recognizing it, because obviously he's just like enjoying the free labor. And so obviously he still didn't give it to her. So Jacob had to ask and remind him, saying like, you know, our deal is expired. So this is the time. I want my wife now. And it says in verse 22, Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. So now a big feast, a big celebration for this wedding. And he does this whole thing, a party. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to Jacob. And he went into her. So serious deception. Right here, the whole thing, everything seems so nice. This romantic story playing up to this moment. And then suddenly, everything changes right there. And at this moment, Jacob is not even aware of what is happening. Verse 24, and Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as maid. So there's at least there's a bonus with the deception, you know. So she gets a maid. Verse 25, so it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. Just imagine that. I mean, just imagine that. And you can almost, I mean, I've read the story many times before in my life too. And you can almost think like, how is it possible? But I want to, you know, it's like, how can it, talk about a rude awakening. You wake up in the morning and the wife lying next to you is not the one that you thought you married. You know, that's sort of it's a big deal. It's like, this is a once in a lifetime thing. That, you know, it's big. It's huge, you know. And but think about this. A heavily veiled girl, late at night, right? Because that's the way she would have been presented. Without electricity, there's no light. Okay? And after 7 years of waiting for her, there's a lot of anticipation, a lot of excitement. So, you know, that's possible. That's what happened. And it's crazy, but it's what happened. And I just think, what a shock. But really to everyone except Laban, you know, because think about Rachel, first of all. You know, she knew that he worked for her for 7 years. I mean, that was an amazing thing. Like, he loves me. He's working for me for 7 years. And now her father takes his sister and gives her to him as wife. So nothing that she could do about that, because her father's authority was absolute. They didn't question that at all. Girls didn't even count in the society. What about Leah? I mean, she knew that Jacob loved her sister so much that he would work 7 years for her. Now he marries her. You know, so she knows that he doesn't love her, and now she has to marry him. So even if she wasn't in agreement with her father, there's nothing she could do. He's like, you're getting married tonight, you know, guess what? And it's like, okay, you know, she may have even loved Jacob secretly. We don't know. She may have considered this as maybe her one chance to get a husband. I don't know what it was, but anyway, she wouldn't stand up to her father in this situation because he had to say over her life. And then Jacob says there, to Laban, he says, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? I think it's an understatement to say this is unfair. This is not right, what happened right here. So Jacob was obviously incensed and he was angry. How did this happen? The thing is, you have to realize God allowed this to happen. Why did God allow this to happen? Was it Laban's sin? Was it Jacob's sin? I think it had to do with the fact that God was busy now working in Jacob, building, disciplining him in a life of faith and obedience too. Because up to this point, he deceived without even thinking about it. He says, why have you deceived me? And I'm thinking, like, I wonder, while he said that, if he had sort of a flashback to the fact that he deceived his father in a very similar way. I just find it's always easier, you know, to spot sin in other people than to spot sin in your own life. Because most of us tend to look at our own lives like quite rosy colored. I look at myself and you're like, oh, I do everything right. Everyone else is the one who's the problem. You know, everyone else does everything wrong. And we tend to see sin so easily in other people. And this is what happened here. Because amazing that just as he deceived his dad by pretending to be someone else, now he marries a girl and she is pretending to be someone else. So he basically gets exactly what he did. Doesn't the Bible say in Galatians 6 verse 7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. And I want to tell you that scripture is true always. That's a principle of God. You will never get away from it, even if you think you've gotten away with it. Whatever you are sowing spiritually into your life is what you will eventually reap. There's no way out of it. It's a biblical principle. And so Jacob now finally met a bigger deceiver than himself. Now the deceiver is being deceived, and he learns a lesson. I find this is sometimes how God works in discipline, because sometimes the only way we can see our sin is having that same thing done to us. That we can, like, how can you do that to me? I mean, I've seen it many times in my own life, you know, with my kids and everything. The things that I'm like, as I'm saying something to them, I'm thinking like, man, I do the same thing with the Lord, you know. And it's just that conviction there, because that's how the Lord teaches us, because we can't see our own sin so clearly. And so our disobedience may not derail God's plan for our life, but it will greatly affect the way that things play out. Our decisions does play a role in how our life is going. If God has a plan for our life, God's plan will still stand for our life, but, you know, it may take some interesting turns. But again, even though God may use it for correcting Jacob, it doesn't in any way justify Laban's deception, you know. So Laban couldn't really have done anything worse to any of these people. To Jacob, to Rachel, to Leah, he couldn't have done anything worse to all three of them. This is a terrible thing. He was a scoundrel, because Leah, I think she got the worst of the deal, because she knew he didn't love her and she was being put up to this. So verse 26, Laban said, it must not be done so in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. So, I mean, this is a lame excuse. Oh, did I forget to tell you? I should have mentioned this 7 years ago, but this is the way that it works in our country. You know, it's a little bit late, I think, for that, you know. Maybe because of his past that he took this thing so much better. I mean, we don't see him getting excited overly and angry and fighting and, you know, we just see him sort of accepting it. And I think the reason for that is the Lord's busy working in his heart and he realizes, listen, I've done the same thing to my own family. And so God is busy working in his life right here. Verse 27, he says, fulfill a week and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve me still another 7 years. So that's crazy. If you respond now, you can get the double deal. You know, both sisters, two girls in 2 weeks. You know, it's like just sign here again kind of thing. And Laban is just a scoundrel. It's amazing how he would, I mean, he saw his daughters just like things. You know, he didn't even treat them as, he didn't really care for them. He was just trying to get, so he says fulfill a week. And by saying fulfill a week, because the marriage ceremony would last a week. So he says, okay, at least just finish your honeymoon. And then after the honeymoon, then you can get the other one too. So that's the way that we'll do it. We'll give you the other one too. It's like we'll throw in another one in a deal, you know. And you will serve me another 7 years. Not only did he know how to bargain, he knew how to manipulate. Because now, again, he had Jacob exactly where he wanted him. Think about how sad this is. Jacob, not that there's anything wrong with Leah, but Jacob would never have worked 7 years for Leah. He did it because of the amazing love that he had for Rachel. He's like, 7 years. I mean, he wouldn't have done that. Now he's like, okay, you do another 7 and you can get her too. So he's got him exactly where he wants him because he loves Rachel. There's nothing that he can do at this point. And he manipulates him, yeah, because it's the love for Rachel that made him do that. Verse 28. Then Jacob did so and fulfilled a week. And so he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. So exactly, he went through with the honeymoon. It must have been interesting, I don't know. But sometimes, you know, life takes these unexpected changes. And sometimes, obviously, it has to do with the choices that we make. Sometimes we bring it on ourselves. But sometimes, things just don't work the way that we want them to work. The thing is, I think as you take these unexpected turns in life, it's how you negotiate the turn. Because oftentimes we think, listen, I can negotiate this turn by myself. But we find that the only way that we can really do this is by putting our faith and our trust in God. God, life has just thrown me a big curveball. I don't know what to do with this. And we need to run to the Lord and say, Lord, you need to help me now in this situation. And this is how God's going to start building the life of faith in Jacob. So God has to teach Jacob to walk as a man of faith, just like his grandfather Abram. And so he's got a long way to go. And this is how God chooses to work. God didn't plan this for him, but God uses circumstances to bring him to where he wants him to be. So he gave him Rachel as a wife too. So at least he didn't have to wait another 7 years. I mean, it's a long, imagine you wait 7 years for this girl, you know, and you get the wrong one. It's crazy. But he marries two girls in 2 weeks. And then verse 29, and Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. So there's another maid in on the deal. And then verse 30, then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah. And he served with Laban still another 7 years. So he did it. He took the deal, and now he finally gets Rachel as his wife, but at a great cost. So pretty much he's working 14 years for this one girl, and I'm sure he's thinking it's worth it, except now he's got another wife. So this is really, at this point, an example of bigamy in the Bible, which turns out very soon, we're going to see in the same chapter, it turns into polygamy. You know, all these wives, which is never a great thing. It's never, ever a good idea. And we see the case in point because it says he loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. I mean, I don't think you can effectively love more than one wife. You know, it's just not going to work emotionally. There's always going to be a lot of things coming in. So jealousy is the most obvious thing. But the thing is, you can't really blame Jacob because it's not like he wanted to marry Leah. It wasn't his decision. He was tricked into it. He was deceived into it. He couldn't help the way that he felt about Rachel. And so it's not like you can blame any of them. It was Laban. But he served Laban another 7 years. So he still had to work to pay off a dowry. It's almost like making car payments, you know, because, I mean, now you have these two wives and you have to, like, continue paying for another 7 years. It's like, it's crazy, you know. Verse 31. And then when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. And here we see something interesting, but also something, I think, very important, because the Lord saw her. The Lord cared about Leah. Even though her father didn't really care about her, the Lord cared about her. The Lord cares about every single person. And he sees Leah. He sees that she is the unfairly unloved wife. And like I say, I think she was the worst off. And so now God sees her in a situation that she didn't necessarily want to be in, but she was forced into that. And you know what God does? He gives her grace at this moment. Verse 32. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. She is the first one now to have a son. He's got these two wives, and this is what the Lord chooses to do. Rachel was barren, and then Leah had the son, and she called the son, look, a son, Reuben. It's like, look, there's a son. It's like, and the thing of that is, like, it's really exciting because look, it's like in those days, in that culture, it's like, this is a son. This is what you care about. Everything in life is about the fact that you would bear sons. And so this is a son, a great value of sons in that culture. And she says, like, therefore my husband will love me. So now she thinks, because of this son, you know, I'm going to have more favor with him than Rachel does because she's barren. Then verse 33, she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I'm unloved, he has therefore given me the son also. And she called his name Simeon. So Simeon, now she says, the Lord has heard me. I'm unloved. And the one thing that we do see is all of these people, you know, they are very much focused on their own issues and their own selfishness. But she's like, this is my affliction. This is my condition. And she calls all her sons by these names that just happened. She says, the Lord heard me. So she calls him hearing. You know, Simeon means hearing. It says, and she conceived again and bore a son, and she said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi. So Levi means joined or attached. So, like I said, whatever happened at that moment when you were born, man, that would be your name. You know, it's like just that circumstance would determine who you are. And you can see this longing for her because she is in the situation unfair, but she wants her husband just to love her too, because obviously she's unloved. Verse 35, and she conceived again and bore a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah. Judah means praise. And then she stopped bearing. So the names of her sons, very indicative of a desire to be accepted, to be loved by her husband. And the thing that we see here is this is where the tribes of Israel really starts. And two of the most significant tribes comes right here from Leah. The tribe of Judah, where the Messiah would be born out of eventually, the tribe of Judah that Messiah would be coming from, and the tribe of Levi, where the whole priesthood would be coming from. Both of these two very important tribes comes from this unloved wife of Jacob. So God was busy working, and I think it's quite amazing. And it says, then she stopped bearing. So these boys were born pretty much very shortly after one another. And then we go on in the next chapter there where he continues to build a family. It says, now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. You know, it's understandable that she would be so emotionally affected by this in this culture, because everything in that culture for a woman would be about the amount of sons that she can bring into the world, because everything, even if you didn't have children, if you were barren, you would be looked on as someone who was cursed by God. It would be a terrible disgrace for her to go on. And now her sister, things have switched around. She was always the beautiful sister, always, you know, and now things are totally switched around. Now she is the one who's bearing the children, Leah, and Rachel is the one who's struggling. And for the first time probably in her life, that she was envying her sister, you know. And it's understandable in this culture. And she said to Jacob in that emotion, give me children or else I'll die. And so this, you can understand, but it's still an emotional woman speaking. It's not his decision. It's not in his hands. Obviously, you know, in the physical relationship, this was not his problem, because it was in God's hands and he's been having all these other children with his sister. So in that culture, like I said, it is grace. It was seen as a curse. And this teaches us that we can never base God's love for us on our circumstances. Never ever think if something happens like this, like Rachel did. She felt like, according to the whole society, like God hates me or whatever. God is against me because he's not opening my womb. No, God was using the circumstance for something much greater later. But never think that God's love is based on your circumstance. A lot of people can get hurt like that. When you tell them, look where you're in, it's because there's something wrong in your life or whatever. No, not necessarily. Romans 5:8 says, God demonstrates his own love towards us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So let us remember that, because God loves every person more than you can ever be loved by anyone, more than anyone will ever deserve. That's what I always say about God's love. God's love is perfect. It's a perfect love. God loves every person completely, perfectly. He cannot love you more and he cannot love you less, because his love is completely, despite us, is completely a perfect love. So verse 2, and Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, because now, you know, they're fighting in their marriage, a fight with his unreasonable wife at this moment because she's emotional. And he said, am I in the place of God who withheld you from you the fruit of the womb? So this is typically what happens when we fight in marriages, unfortunately, because women normally tend to respond emotionally and the man just like logically, like this is not my fault, you know. And so they are in this argument right here. But the thing is, notice here that when you expect of your spouse what only God can give you, there will always be a problem in the marriage. You can only get from God what you can get from God. You can't get that from your spouse. Your spouse is never supposed to fulfill everything in your life. You're not supposed to be fulfilled in your spouse. You're supposed to be fulfilled in God. And that's why you also never make your spouse your refuge. God should be your refuge, because he is the only one who can do certain things. And so when you expect that of your spouse, what only God can give you, that will be problems for you. Verse 3, so she said, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her and she will bear a child on my knees that I may also have children by her. So that's another thing that happened in that culture. But again, that's desperation, you know. Yeah, that's desperate. Again, she's waiting on God's timing is always difficult. We have to face it. Waiting on God's, I mean, all of us, none of us likes to wait. Even with this building thing, waiting on God's timing is difficult. But you know what? It's always worth it. And do we see a pattern here? If we look at the lives of the patriarchs, what happened? You know, Abraham waited 25 years for the child that was promised him. Then Isaac, you know, there was 20 years where Rebekah was barren. Then he prayed for Rebekah and then God opened a womb. And now we see the next generation here too, that the same kind of thing happening right here. And she says, well, you know, this is what we'll do. So she comes up with a plan, just like his grandma came up with a plan, you know. And it's a bad plan. It's always a bad idea. So verse 4, and she gave him Bilhah, her maid, his wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. So in that culture, that son would be considered her son. And whether it would be literally born on her knees or not, we don't know exactly how these things work. But because her slave was in her hands like a possession, she could just take her child and say, it's my child. You know, so that's the kind of thing that happened. So Jacob is just like, okay, honey, whatever you want. No, no, it's a bad idea, Jacob. Don't do it. You know, but husbands are commanded by God what to love and to cherish your wives. Ephesians 5, Colossians chapter 3. God commands us to care for them also emotionally. 1 Peter 3 verse 7 says, husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. But looking out for your wife, loving her, caring for her, doesn't mean going along with her when she makes emotional decisions necessarily. You are still the leader of the house. You still have to do what is right. Verse 5, it says, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And then Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. And therefore she called his name Dan. Dan means judging. And because of her own envy, she viewed this child born in the flesh as a victory and a vindication. She's like, God has, she's been walking around this whole thing like the whole time, God hates me. Everyone knows God hates me. I'm under some kind of curse. And now she's, look, God has judged. He's judged me. I'm vindicated. He doesn't hate me, you know? And because of her own envy, she viewed this child born as like that vindication. And Bilhah conceived again, we see there in verse 7. Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. It's like this just goes from bad to worse, because once you're in the flesh, because this is a fleshly decision, once you're in the flesh and you start getting results, you think like, well, this is working, you know? So now you go on. Now a second child with Bilhah. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings, I've wrestled with my sister, and indeed I've prevailed. So you can see this relationship that they're having. It's like a real sad, tense relationship. It's like a wrestling, you know, between each other. And so she says, I've prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali, basically wrestler. You know, she calls the kid like wrestling. And in verse 9, when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her for Jacob as wife. It's like a game, you know. I give one, no, I give two. And I was like, you know, it's like everyone, it's like now I give my maid to you. So this whole thing is just, it sounds like a TV soap. It's just going, it's just crazy, you know. It's a competition, really. And the thing is, you know, we don't see really Jacob complaining, because they're all competing for him. So he's just, you know, whatever. Okay, honey, I'll, you know, it's fine. And he's just going on. Not good. And verse 10, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son, and then Leah said, a troop comes. So she called his name Gad. And so that's what Gad means. It means a troop. So you can see there's war in this house. So she's like, no, mine is like a troop. You know, it's like this whole household must have been crazy. Verse 12, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And then Leah said, I'm happy, for the daughters will call me blessed. So she called his name Asher. Asher means happy. So now this is a good name. At least one kid, you know, she's like happy now. And she's like, okay, this is what we're going to call him. Verse 14. Now Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. So now Reuben at this stage is possibly around 7 years old. He's a young little boy. He's the oldest of all the boys born so far. And he's walking around the field and he finds some mandrakes in the field and he brings it to his mother. Mandrakes are considered a magical fruit in those days. It's believed to be an aphrodisiac, and they believed that it helped in fertility. So obviously this was a fruit that people desired, because that's what the whole culture was about. In Hebrew, the idea of it's like a love apple kind of thing. It's a small orange fruit, and it's called mandrakes because the root of this little plant looks like a little small man or a woman. You know, so it looks like when you pull out the plant, it's like a bush kind of thing, and it's the root looks like a little person. So it's maybe that's why it's mandrakes. I don't know why they call it that. But again, we see now Rachel said to Leah, please give me some of your son's mandrakes. So now she's making plans still. And we can see that the thinking and the whole operation is now in the flesh. Because, you know, there's no looking to God and not praying and asking God. Because at this stage, she probably reckons, well, you know, God doesn't want to hear me. So God's not interested in what I'm saying. And so now I've got to make some plans. And isn't it what happens when we wait on the Lord and the Lord doesn't come through the way that we want him to come through? Then we start making our own plans. And so she's like, well, give me some of that stuff. And it's like, now we're looking into all the magic, ooh, you know, like, are we going to use this thing and it's going to maybe like a placebo effect or whatever. But then Rachel said to Leah, give me the mandrakes. But she said to her, is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes? So she's like, you know, you just take everything from me. And you can see the kind of relationship they had. It's just really bad. And Rachel said, therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes. So this is almost really too weird to be understood. But it's like, basically, she's like, okay, you can sleep with him tonight. So obviously, he was mostly with Rachel. Rachel had a tent, Jacob had a tent, Leah had a tent. I don't know where the servants were, but, and so she's like, okay, when he comes back today, he can go to you, you know? So obviously, mostly he was with Rachel. And so there's this whole competition the whole time. And Rachel is hoping in this mandrakes now, because she's hoping it will make her fertile, and she's making plans in her own hands. And I think we should just ask ourselves, you know, when God doesn't come through in your timing or in the things that you are asking him, when you feel like God's not hearing you, what do you do? Do you take things in your own hand, or do you just continue to seek the Lord? Do you start planning, or do you wait? So now she's scheming. She says, you can be with him tonight. Verse 16, then Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come into me, for I've surely hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. So this is a crazy household. So you're mine tonight. As she runs to him in the field, and, you know, again, we don't read anything about Jacob complaining. He's just like, okay, that's where I am tonight. So he's just glad everyone wants him, and that's sort of crazy, you know. Verse 7, he's the one who's got the least worries. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. So now, again, that was enough. And so now she's bearing another son. It's like a game, because the one with the most sons wins, you know, kind of thing. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I've given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. And that's what Issachar means, is wages. You know, so just imagine that poor boy. Like, hey, wages, where did you get that name? Oh, you don't want to hear that story. That's an interesting story, you know. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Really, a good dowry is the idea. Now my husband will dwell with me because I've borne him six sons. So she called his name Zebulun. And that's what Zebulun means. It means dwelling. So you can see the heart of this. This is what she wants. She wants, like, I want my husband now to start dwelling with me. Obviously, he's been sort of dwelling with Rachel, but this is her desire. Now this will hopefully convince him. Six sons. Hopefully this will swing in now and he'll start sort of living with me. Is that's really what she wants. And this, it's like this complete divided household that's in a permanent battle, and it's really bad. It's almost like the word of faith thing, because it's like, I'm going to call him dwelling because now my husband will start dwelling with me. It's sort of like speaking these things into existence, kind of weird idea, just like that, you know. Things doesn't work like that, and now this guy's got this name for the rest of his life too. Afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Now, the only reason this daughter Dinah is mentioned, because she is going to be applicable a bit later in the story. So that's why she's mentioned now, because daughters wouldn't even be mentioned. So there might have been some daughters in between that has been born here, and we don't know about them because, it's, you know, they wouldn't be mentioned because they're just not important. But now afterward, Dinah, because Dinah will play out later again in the story. And so her name is not really that important according to the story, but it does mean judgment. Verse 22, and then God remembered Rachel. So, you know, see, God looks at everyone, and now God remembered Rachel. It's not like he forgot her. And God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So this poor girl has now been living for such a long time. Even though her husband was mostly with her, she felt that reproach like every day. She's like, people are looking at me as if I'm cursed, and she's walking around in a society with this thing every single day. You know, so it was a big thing for her. But now, finally, in God's timing, he opens her womb. And now she's excited because she says, now everyone will know that God doesn't reproach me. So for her, it was a big, much bigger thing. Like, it's not just I want a child, but it's like everyone else will look differently at me because they know God is not against me. God doesn't hate me. And again, important never to believe that your circumstances mean that God is mad at you, because God does love you. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. And that's really what Joseph means. It means adding, or Yahweh will add. And now her faith is hopeful again, because after all this time, the husband that initially worked for her, that loved her, now she has a son with him, her own son, and she is hopeful again that God will add. God is going to do things in the future. And sometimes that's all it takes to get our mind on the right place again, is we just need that one touch of the Lord again, that one reminder that, yes, I do love you. I am not against you. Verse 25, and it came to pass then when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I've served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I've done for you. So now, before they start going, now we've almost got the whole tribes of Israel here. We still know Benjamin will come a bit later. But up until now, this is really the origin of where the tribes of Israel comes from. And now, at this point, when Rachel had born Joseph, then Jacob said to Laban, send me away, I need to go. Because he's been in Haran now for more than 14 years. He knows that God wants him in the promised land. He knows he needs to be there eventually. He's only supposed to be away for a few days until Esau cools off. Now he's got this whole life there, and he's like, I got to get back to that land that God promised me. And now he's got 12 or even more than 12 kids at this stage, because the daughters aren't really mentioned. And he's like, give me my kids and my wives, I need to go. And then verse 27, Laban said to him, please stay. If I found favor in your eyes, you're right. You know, for I've learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. So now he's like, no, you can't leave. You know, he's a very clever guy. And it says, by experience I've learned. That word by experience is the word that means by enchantment, really by divination. So we can see that Laban has been practicing this sort of like occult divination. He's like that whole area, like these people weren't godly people. There was like this whole weird thing going on. And he's sort of like, you're my good luck charm. You can't go. If you go, I've seen that, you know, I've heard from that God is blessing me and you can't leave. And it's a terrible guy, but it's a very smart guy. And he's like, I need to keep him. Verse 28, then he said, name me your wages and I will give it. Again, that's sort of kind of what you want, you know. Just make a new deal. Tell me what you want. I'll give it to you, whatever, because I need to keep you. So Jacob said to him, you know, I've served you, for your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for my own house? So now Jacob says a couple of things that's important. He says, I've worked hard for you. You've known how I've worked for you. And since when I got you, you had very little. Now you've got great increases. Your flocks have grown largely because of my hard work. You've increased. And he says, but when will I start providing for my own house? So you're just getting richer and richer by my working for you all these years. And what do I have? Because I have nothing to start my own family. I have no way to provide for my own family. You know, so it's a bad place for me to be. So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. So this is a great thing that he does right here, because he doesn't want to owe this guy anything, or anyone for that matter. And this reminds us of his grandfather, Abraham. What did Abraham do when he rescued from Sodom? You know, the guy said to him, you can keep all the spoil. He says, no, I'm not even going to take a shoelace or whatever. I'm not going to take anything from you. No one has to say one day that you have made me rich, because the glory should go to the Lord. You know, it's only God who's brought me this far. And now we see his grandson, Jacob, saying something very similar. Like, I don't want you to make me rich. I don't want anything from you. But I will make a deal with you. This is the deal I'll make with you. Look at verse 32. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled, the spotted sheep, and the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So he's pretty much saying to him, let me go through the flock. I'll take the solace, you take the stripes. It sounds like a pool game, you know. It's like, but he's like, you take all the solid colored goats, and that means the ones with the dominant genes, and the rest is mine. The ones with the recessive genes, all the ones with the streaks and the spots and the whatever, he's like, I'll take those. And obviously there were only a few of them compared to the rest. And then in verse 33, it says, so my righteousness will answer for me in a time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that's not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. Again, he's thinking to the future. And that's a good thing. Jacob was a clever guy. And I wish more people would think about their future when they make decisions. Because he knows one day, you know, I can say you give me so many or that, and then that day is going to come and there's not going to be any remembrance of that moment, you know. So he's like, let's make a deal that makes it very clear that my righteousness will answer for me in that day. So he's committing it to God, really. He's putting his trust now in God, who will be the one that blesses him. Because his focus is not on the wealth. You know, he could have named his price here, and Laban might have haggled him down or whatever, but he might have given him what he asked for him because he really wanted him there. But now he's a dedicated guy, he's a hardworking guy, but he commits this whole thing to the Lord because he knows what God has promised him. And this is the one good thing, because we see that Jacob knows that God, he's got the blessing, right? His father pronounced a blessing over him. So he believes this. He believes that God is going to bless him. And I think this is quite amazing here. He has absolute confidence that he can make this bad deal that he's making right here and that God's going to bring good out of it. And that, again, reminds us of Abraham. Think about when he had the deal with Lot. He's like, Lot, you pick. And Lot pick all the good stuff for himself. And Abraham's like, the Lord's my inheritance. And the Lord provided for him in the dry spot. And so he does something very similar to his grandpa here. He says, everyone not speckled, spotted will be considered stolen. So it's a very straightforward way. In the future, you can always say, if I've got solids with me, then I've taken your stuff. That's as easy as that. Verse 34, and Laban said, oh, that it would be according to your word. So he can't believe the deal that he's getting again. I mean, not only did he get a great deal for his first daughter, not only did he get an amazing deal for his second daughter, now he's getting this deal that he can't believe. He's like, it's just incredible. Yes, may it be like that, oh man. You know, he can't believe. He's like, okay, just sold. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled, all the spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, every one had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hand of his sons. And then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. This guy is just a scoundrel. Because you're supposed to separate them now, and Jacob is supposed to get the speckled and the spotted ones. So what he does, he takes out all the speckled and the spotted ones, he gives them to his sons, and he puts his sons 3 days' journey away from him. So he's like, no, no, Jacob, you take care of my flock, and it's only the solid colors left. So the odds of the solid colors bearing speckled, spotted, and all these kind of things are not very good. And, you know, he doesn't know what they're doing with the other flock down there, and they're obviously not as effective as he is in animal husbandry or whatever. So it's just incredible, this guy. He is such a big thief, you know. Because he takes them away from them so far, 3 days' journey, so there's no intermingling between these two. And then he gives them to his sons. And so he doesn't realize that he's not up against Jacob, because Jacob is a clever guy. But Laban is not up against Jacob, he's up against God. He's up against Jacob's God, and he doesn't realize that. And that's the big thing, I think, that comes through in the story. No matter how clever you are, no matter how, at the end of the day, it's all up to the Lord, you know, if you put your trust in him. Verse 37. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond in the chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs, where the flocks came to drink, so they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. So this is a very interesting thing. When he peels these, obviously he peels some of the bark away, whether he does it like that or like that, I don't know, but he peeled it away, and somehow it's like these streaks and spots, and he puts these sticks with the sheep and the goats so they would conceive. And the word conceive in the Hebrew really means to be made hot. So I don't know whether it was actually a practical way to get them into heat at that moment to, you know, so they would conceive more or whatever. We have no knowledge of anything like that that was able to work. So it's possible that Jacob knew more about, you know, animal husbandry than we do today. But it's more likely that Jacob did. He made some plans. He did the best he could, and God blessed him, whatever. So they still bore speckled and spotted and whatever, no matter, you know. So he did whatever he did. He had all these tricks. We don't know if anything of these things really worked in that way. But this is whatever God used it, and they still bore. At the end of the day, God is sovereign. So God is the one who decides, you know, what these sheep and goats would bear. So verse 14, and Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face towards the street, and all the brown in the flock of Laban, but he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flocks. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, and they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And so here is something a bit more scientific that he does now. So obviously he's using a selective breeding to increase his strength. So when the strong ones are together, you know, he's like, okay, this is a good time. So I don't know if there was a smell in this thing or sight or whatever happened, but something. And the Lord just blessed it. And so they were just conceiving. And when the feebler ones came, you know, you just, so that was the ones that went to Laban. Verse 43, thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants and camels and donkeys. And again, when it says like he was exceedingly prosperous, the Hebrew word is sort of the idea was bursting exceedingly. So it was a really prosperous word again. It just spoke about how amazingly God blessed him, even with his bad deal that he had. Even though Laban was completely against him, they just bore speckled and spotted, and he was just blessed exceedingly. So in the same way, blessing comes from the Lord to us, and not because we are great or good, but because of the covenant God has made with us through Jesus Christ as Christians and the promise that he's given us in his word. We are blessed. Jacob now, like Abraham, his grandfather, he believed that God is with him and God will bless him. And I'm thinking this is such a great example to us as Christians, because think of us. Do you really believe what the Bible teaches, that when Jesus Christ died for us, what he gave to us? If you really believe that, your outlook in life should be like Jacob's. Like, I don't care if I've got a bad deal here. Who's in charge? God's in charge of my life. So I'm going to trust God. I'm going to go for it. And I'm asking you, do you think like that? Because as Christians, Ephesians 1 verse 3 to 6 says, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places in Christ. Just as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy without blame before him in love, having predestined us to adoption as sons by Jesus Christ to himself, according to the good pleasure of his will, to the praise of the glory of his grace, by which he made us accepted in the beloved. What an amazing scripture. And so the question is, do you doubt that God loves you, or do you doubt in his goodness and his faithfulness towards you? As Christians, we shouldn't doubt. We shouldn't be so focused on our circumstances and our situations. We should do what Jacob did here. We're like, even if I got the bad deal, I know God's for me and God's going to work this out. You know, Romans 8:28, we all know that verse. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to his purpose. We know that God is Yahweh Yireh. We could say Jehovah Jireh. You know, he's God our provider. The fact is, do we live like we trust him? Because I think Jacob is a great example to us in that.